Hello, airport industry folks. Welcome to the AX Insider Podcast, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Andy Telejohn, the senior writer at Airport Experience News. This podcast will be part of our 20 Years, 20 Voices series celebrating the upcoming 20th Airport Experience Conference. During these calls, we're talking with industry veterans who've overseen the evolution of the concessions industry and the improvement in the customer experience over the last two decades and change. Today, we're talking with Greg Paradies, President and CEO of Paradies Lagardère. Greg, you've been in this business pretty much, I guess, since you were a kid. So, thank you for taking some time and sharing some thoughts.
Yeah, well, thank you, Andy. Thanks for the invite. Yeah, I've been in the industry for, I don't want to give up my age, but 36 years, okay. a long time. I worked outside the business a couple of years after college, after graduating from University of Texas in Austin. I really wasn't positive what I wanted to do. The Paradies Airport business, which is what we called it at the time, was a relatively small business, about a $30 million business. We had sold another business a few years earlier. So we felt like this business could be a very good business. But we didn't know. The times were very different. There were a few very large players in the business. But from my perspective, I thought it's something I may want to do. So right out of college, I went to work for Macy's, which at the time had a very good executive training program.
Sure.
Spent 2 years there in their store management in the buying office. So I learned a lot in 2 years. And interesting enough, a lot of the people who I worked with during those 2 years, I interacted with in our industry or just in the retail industry or food and beverage industry. So as we know, it's a very small world. And really, I joined Paradies Airport Shops back in 1987. And really, the reason why I joined that year was there was an opportunity for me to run a business within Paradies Airport Shops. And it's in the hotel gift shop business. We had just formed a joint venture with Hyatt, the Pritzker family, to expand or to open and expand gift shops and hotels. And Dick Dixon, who was the president at the time or chief operating officer at the time, asked me if I wanted to come in and run that business. And I did come in and run that business. I ran it for about 4 years. And then we sold the hotel gift shop business back in 91, 92. And that's when I moved into the airport concession business at that time. So okay. That was really my road to Paradies and the airport business.
So you did take the opportunity to leave the family business for a while. Was there something about, the airport industry itself that drew you back in? What made you decide after all to get into and stay in this business for as long as you have?
Well, I've been around it. So our company was formed in 1960. So I've been around it all the way back to when I was I was about a 10-year-old kid who knew nothing. I remember walking DFW Airport when it was being built. So that goes back many, many years ago. And I just loved airports, as did my father and uncle. We felt like that was a good place to be. But, from 1960 to 1980, our business grew very slowly because we had another business. We were in the wholesale business. And when we sold that business, that gave us some resources to grow this business. And something, out of college, I didn't know that was what I wanted to do for sure. But, after working at Macy's for a couple of years, I liked retail a lot. I enjoyed the people part of the business. I enjoyed the fast-paced, fast-changing part of the business. So at the time, it felt like it was the right time for me to move into Paradies, which we moved it from Paradies Airport Shops to Paradies Shops, because we were beyond just airports. We got into hotel gift shops as well.
Sure. So, and you got into the business or back into the business as the business was starting to, kind of take shape. People talk about the old days of stale pizza and hot dogs that were on those spinny rack things. You've seen the evolution quite up close and personal. What do you think it was that sort of drove the evolution to where we are now? And what do you think the roles of Paradis and in more recent years, Paradis Lagardère has played in that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Going back in time, back into the mid-80s or later 80s, you know, back then, Andy, concessions were typically awarded to the highest bidder. So it was more of a bid versus a true RFP, request for proposal, where you look at various criteria. And in that environment, we were not successful. We were not winning much. You know, one bad deal can put a small company out of business. And we made some challenging deals back then. Fortunately, we survived to tell about it. But the industry has evolved from that, where quality has become much more important. We think we played a role in that piece, sharing that quality rules long term. Yes, you may get a higher dollar up front, but what do you give up? You might give up service, poor service, you know, something has to give. We always say there's 100 cents on the dollar. So companies who pay too much have to come back in other areas, such as customer service, the leasehold improvements in the stores and restaurants, and other areas. So we convinced we helped to convince the industry that the request for proposal process was a better process, where you look at various criteria to select the best concessionaire for you short term and long term versus the highest bidder, which is a very dangerous formula. Many of those companies were going out of business because they just couldn't afford to pay the dollars they had bid.
Sure. Yeah, it makes sense. Paradis Lagardère, Paradis has been, you know, really strong on the specialty retail category over the years. You were influential in bringing a lot of different brands to the airport. That's an evolving category right now. What is your strategy in that area now versus how it's been over the last couple of decades? Do you have a sense on how that's going to shake out over the years to come here?
Yeah, that has been a big part of our differentiation, Andy, early on, where we were bringing really the first national brands to airports from a retail standpoint. This was before we got in the food and beverage business. But if you look in the late 80s, early 90s, we brought PJ Tour shops to airports. We brought Brooks Brothers stores to airports. We brought Brighton. So those were some of the early brands that were brought into airports, and it resonated to the customers. Both the travelers and the airports we served, where they saw this truly created a better travel experience, a differentiator for airports. But it has evolved a lot. Today, we operate over 70 different retail brands in airports across North America. And, as we say, COVID accelerated a lot of things. One thing it accelerated was that the lifespan of brands, or brands, one season can be hot, very strong. The next season, it could be cold, not as relevant. And the great brands we've tried to team up with are those that are that evolve. But with that being said, we are now part of our strategy is to develop especially retail stores. It could have local brands, national brands, or international brands that can flex in and out as brands come and go. For example, No Boundaries is one of our retail brands. That is our brand, No Boundaries. But within it, it is filled with national brands, such as Columbia, Patagonia, Kool, and others. In 5 years from now, the brands may be different, because those may be the brands that are more relevant to the travelers and customers we serve. So we are developing concepts around specialty retail that are flexible, to adapt to the changing wants and needs of the traveler.
Interesting. So No Boundaries might have three or four stores in one airport and in another airport have a completely different portfolio of brands in it.
Yeah, but some of the brands are, you know, what is interesting in our business, as we know, is many of the customers are not from the city where they're buying.
Sure.
So a lot of the core brands are consistent. If a brand like Kool, which is a Salt Lake City brand, KUHL, is hot in one city, it's probably going to be hot everywhere. But we carry, geez, 30, 40 different brands within these stores versus a mono store, which is dependent on one brand. And if that brand gets cold, that store's in trouble.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of dealing with this challenge with what the future of specialty retail is. That's quite a concept. You mentioned flexibility. Paradies Lagardère went from being primarily a retail company to pretty aggressively chasing the food and beverage side of things as well. What drove that decision, and what's the breakdown now of one side versus the other?
Yeah, there were several reasons we made that strategic decision. So back in 2010 and 2011, we were putting together our leadership team, our 5-year strategic plan. And the challenge was, how do we accelerate the growth of our business? We were growing nicely, but how do we accelerate the growth? We had brought in some outside investors who share that same sentiment of how we accelerate the growth of the business. And as we looked at the overall business, on the retail side of the business, we were playing 60 airports in North America, and the business was still growing nicely. But we saw food and beverage was growing even faster. And as we looked to the future, we saw that food and beverage would probably outpace the growth of retail, even though retail would continue to grow. So that was the first decision point. Another reason why we moved into food and beverage, we saw airports looking for what we called hybrid units. A hybrid unit is defined as a unit which offers both retail and food and beverage in one unit. Some of these markets you see, like Whole Foods type markets, or we do a Plum Market in Detroit, for example. And we do a lot of our buying, we're in the process of acquiring Taste on the Fly, and their Napa Farms award-winning concept is what I consider a hybrid unit. And we knew we had to get better in the food and beverage area to truly operate first-class markets and other hybrid units. And the third reason why we got in, and just thinking back, and the number of airports who asked our company, they loved it, loved what we were doing on retail, but they were not happy about their food and beverage program. So they said, "Paradies, why don't you also operate our food and beverage program?" And for years we said, "No, we're not in that business. We're experts in retail, but not food and beverage." But we saw where the industry was going, and we said we need to bring in the expertise in food and beverage. So we created two separate divisions. We did not, some people said you could just let your retail team run your food business or vice versa. We learned very quickly that's not the best way approach. That might be a way to save money, but not to build a quality brand. We want to make sure, first and foremost, we were the quality play on food and beverage, just like we have been for many, many years on retail. So we developed and recruited a first-class food and beverage team from best of class food and beverage operators, just like we have on the retail side of the business. So as airports ask us, we said, "Now we're ready." And then Asheville Airport was the first airport we saw, I think, at the AXN conference many years ago, and told Lou Blauweiss, "Guess what? You've been asking us for all these years. We're ready to go." And he gave us that first opportunity. And we proved we could be the quality play on food and beverage, just like retail. And our business grew organically. And then we made a major acquisition, grew organically from 0 to $100 million in 5 years. And then we made a major acquisition back in 2018 of HBF, Jose Brand of Food, and Vino Volo. And that at another $300 million of business. And I think you're aware we are very close to closing the acquisition of Taste on the Fly, which will now make our dining division over $600 million. Most importantly, I think we're adding a lot of expertise. Our team's done a great job, and it's all about how we get better and better. So to answer your second part of your question, it will be over 40% of our total business. Something I'm very comfortable with and very excited about.
That's
Sure.
pretty good growth in that time period in that business. Sounds like the demand for that side of the demand for your services on that side of the game was pretty strong as well. Talking with Greg
Yes.
Paradies, President and CEO of Paradies Lagardère, you see a lot of airports. You're in a lot of airports. You probably look at things a little differently than the typical traveler when you are there. What are a couple things, food side, retail side, services side? I don't know, maybe you're a big gamer. What are a couple of amenities that wouldn't have been around when you got into the concession side of things, or even when I did 18 years ago, that that aren't in the that weren't in the airport back when we got started?
Yeah, I mean, when you look, I mean, airports have transformed into cities, as you know, Andy, like many cities. I mean, I think Atlanta Airport, for example, has about 50,000 employees in the airport, around that airport. So I think the big, amenities or opportunities from an amenity standpoint are really, I think, about twofold. One is how airports truly build a community feel that people want to work at. Okay, not because they're forced to, because they want to. It becomes a best of place, best of class work environment. And there's airports in Canada, there's some in the US where people want to work there. You know, they're proud to work there. And I think one of the big challenges as airports build true community feel to compete with the best companies on the street, how do we convince and incite people to work at an airport versus a first-class company on the street? And that's sort of a lot of times amenities. It could be daycare centers, pet care centers, workout facilities on site. But how do we provide those amenities where people want to work there versus have to? So we want to make sure we hire, we call it hire for passion, train for skill, where we hire people who are passionate and want to be in the airport, because we know an engaged employee can provide a first-class experience. A disengaged employee will not. So that's one key amenity that I see. Airports are starting to work hard on. It's not just talk anymore. And a lot of time, in the old world, airports would say first response is, well, we can't do daycare centers, or we cannot do pet care centers, or now they're saying, let's figure it out together.
The daycare center thing just fascinates me. Pittsburgh recently opened that up, talked to a couple other folks as part of these calls that are looking into it. That was nowhere near the radar 18 years ago when I started writing about things airport related. That's certainly a step in the right direction. You talked about creating a place that's a world-class work environment. People are proud to work there. Conversely, the industry as a whole has been facing a labor shortage. Labor was tough before COVID, and in the time since, during this recovery period, A, how much has that approach helped with that? And B, do you have any other best practices on the labor shortage front that have you been able to solve?
Yeah, so this is, of course, has been the biggest challenge as we move forward out of the pandemic, Andy. So building that community really helps companies like ours and our competitors hire associates who, are engaged and can provide that experience that our airports want. So that's very important. And, a big part of what our success, as far as, first of all, we're pretty close to hired up now. So we've come a long way. And it's not just money. Yes, we're all paying more to recruit first-class associates. Our commitment to our brands is seamless execution, whether it be Chick-fil-A or Starbucks or PJ Tour or Brooks Brothers or others. But the key is culture, and I truly believe that. I think that is one of our key differentiators, is our family culture. Even though we're a much larger company, how do you create a great place to work for strong performers? It needs to be beyond money. And that's what we work very hard on. We have some wonderful leadership in our platforms, and they are much more important than I am. They're the ones who set the stage every day where you have to open at 4 a.m. in the morning. I was just in an airport. We just opened up a new operation this past weekend. 4:30 in the morning, doors were open. They're there at 3:45. Those are the heroes of the business. But they have to feel like they're working for more than just a company. You know, why do you want to work in an airport where you have to go through TSA, you have to park off site 20 minutes, et cetera, et cetera. So we work very hard on creating that family culture. We talk about how we hook the hearts of our people so they want to work. And we that's why we have tremendous tenure within our company. As I go to platforms, I meet people 20, 25, 30 years that have been part of our company. And they love the company. It's not because of me. It's because of that leadership at the platform level.
Okay, great. You mentioned the cost of, I mean, culture is great, but as you mentioned, the cost of labor has gone up. A lot of costs going up. The cost of building out, and you mentioned some of the other challenges that are inherent in bringing people to work at the airport. And you know, it's got to be a little more challenging now to you know, pencil out some of these deals these days. How do you make the money work, and what does the industry maybe need to conversely, from the previous question, what does the industry need to work on that isn't in place right now that might make things even better for the customer and a little easier for people to compete in going forward over the years to come?
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question, and we've been working with our airports partners, so they understand really the reality of the business, and they get it most get it because they see it in their airports where their capital costs are going up much higher than inflation, their people costs are going up higher than inflation, so they're feeling some of the same pressures as we are, and that's why there's a lot more collaboration. Recognizing if we work together on these challenges, we will come to solutions much faster. And yes, we can have a win-win solution. So part of it is how you put together requests for proposals, RFPs. Of course, longer term helps. Recognizing all the other costs associated with running the business and how we can work together to keep them as low as possible, whether third-party distribution, which some airports have introduced, or marketing fees or CAM charges. Everything, something has to give here. And fortunately, customer traffic has been increasing, but it's still really just at or below 19 levels. I think overall in North America, it's slightly below 19 levels. So it's not like it's increased in the last 4 years. It's back to 19 levels, which of course is a good thing with what we were thinking 3 years ago, that it could take longer. So we feel fortunate that's happened. But with that being said, we did not anticipate this kind of inflationary pressure from wages, CapEx, supplies, everything else has grown exponentially, as you know, and pricing has not been able to keep up. So working, we worked with airports on pricing, and we believe in fair pricing. We are, this industry just cannot revert back to gouging. That is to nobody's benefit. So we are very conscientious to that, and our airports are as well. But there's been a little more flexibility, as you all know, from street pricing to street plus 10 to street plus 15. And we think, fair pricing is very important, and it needs to be consistent throughout the airport, but there has to be some give. With the cost going up. So we're working together with our airport partners. And one of the very positive results of COVID, there were many challenges, but our global CEO always said, we will rebound stronger. I'm very proud that Paradis Agadir has rebounded stronger. And I would say our industry has as well, because there's much more collaboration. They're much more listening to each other. There's more trust. To come up with solutions that are win-win solutions. And it all goes back to what's best for the traveler versus what's best for an agenda or political agenda or whatever it may be. Everybody seems to be more focused on the travel experience.
That's good to hear. And you answered the next question I was going to have based on what you were saying there. The collaboration really did seem to increase during the pandemic, and I'm kind of trying to figure out Do people feel like that collaboration has continued into today? So your sense is that people are working together better now than they have in the past.
Yes, better. You know, maybe we in some airports, we may have taken a couple steps back as things got back to, quote, a little more towards normal. But overall, I'd say as a general statement, the collaboration is better in our industry, you know, among the different stakeholders. But that's still a big opportunity between the airlines, the airports, the concessionaires, the other services offered in airports. You know, even though we make progress and the pandemic accelerated that progress, once again, that's a good thing. There's still a lot of opportunity there where we could work more closely, share information, share data to once again get to our goal of making the customer experience better. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, revenues will increase for all of us. And it's, once again, it would be a win-win. But there's sharing of information is has been a little more challenging than I would hope. And it's been that way in other industries as well.
Okay. You also, Greg Paradis, president and CEO of Paradis Lagardère, you mentioned the pricing discussion. That's been another one that's been a lively one for longer than the 18 years I've been writing about airports. You know, is there, you said you can't go back to gouging, but probably have to face the reality that prices are going to go up as part of a solution for all of the costs that have increased. Is there a right sweet spot in your mind in terms of street pricing plus 10 or 15? Or, I mean, is it a case by case basis?
Yeah, I think it's sort of that range of street plus 10 versus to street plus 15. You know, I think there's a couple of airports out there that have proven that if there's no pricing restrictions, competition will manage pricing. And in a major airport, I think they have proven that. So I'm not so sure if you bring quality operators in, they will do the right thing. If you don't, they won't. It could be short-term gains. So, you know, the future, Andy, may be no pricing restrictions unless it is abused.
Okay.
And once again, competition a lot of times manages such opportunities such as pricing.
Okay. All right. Interesting to see that go forward. Greg, what's one amenity, you know, whether it's maybe an overseas airport or on the street that you're seeing pop up that hasn't made it to airports yet that you'd like to see if there is one?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, we are starting to see gyms open in airports. Yep. A little bit. I think that's once again, that's twofold. Going back to what I stated earlier about how we build an airport community where employees want to work there versus have to work there. These services, as I said, daycare, pet care, gyms, you know, and the gyms serve both the customers' needs as well as employee needs as well, as far as health and wellness. So I could see that accelerating, though it does take space, and that's not in prime space, but how you use space that is less attractive for mm-hmm. some of these services that are more geared toward airport employees and, you know, travelers who have long layovers.
Okay, sure. That makes a lot of sense. Greg, I think you've answered the questions I came with. I wanted to find out if there was anything that you'd like to talk about that we haven't hit on.
Yeah, you know, overall, Andy, we're very bullish on the industry. I'm very bullish on our company. You know, what I've seen, I mentioned it briefly before, it's been really good to see the evolution of our industry. And we call it, you know, the industry was somewhat stuck in the past or with a fixed mindset. This is the way we've done it. This is the way we're going to do it in the future because it's safe. Now the leaders in airports are more commercially driven and there's more of a growth mindset. Like let's focus on the traveler. Let's figure things out. You mentioned the daycare centers. You know, let's figure it out versus just, how things should be done versus how they have been done, once again, to make that traveler experience a better one. And there's a big opportunity there because airports are still tough out there traveling, and we want to create a great experience so more travelers want to travel and travel more frequently as well. So once again, I'm very excited. Appreciate your time today, Andy, and for all of our airport partners across North America. We appreciate their partnership, their support through the challenging times, including COVID. And it's fun to see how we're working together better post-COVID as well. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to hear that things are busy and that the numbers keep going up, and that while we're not without challenges, that we've at least got some upswing and some positive things to write and talk about as opposed to a couple of years ago. So Greg Paradis, thanks for taking some time and fitting us in.
Thank you, Andy. Yeah, it's a lot more fun today than it was 3 years ago. That's for sure. Take care.
No question about that. You too.